What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today we're going to be talking about a couple of things. I want to kind of do a little bit of housekeeping this episode. So we're obviously going to talk about the win against the Bucks because that was the best win by far of the season, even topping the win at Miami. I want to talk about the contributions we got from so many of the players during that game. But I also want to get to some of the mailbag questions. I asked a bunch of you guys on Twitter to give me some of your best questions to answer, and I took probably seven or eight of them that I'll go into detail on. And then I also want to give you guys an update on the lottery, where the Wizards stand, certain picks that they could get. Just trying to make sure everyone is kind of in the loop and understands what's at stake for these final six games of the season, because they don't fucking matter for the most part in terms of the Wizards are eliminated. However, they do hold a lot of weight, in terms of where the Wizards rank in the draft this year, in terms of the Clippers pick and other second round picks they own. So a lot to get through this episode, but I want to start with the Bucks win. And I want to start there because this was the best win of the season. A 117-113 win. Honestly, like a wire to wire win against the Bucks. The Bucks came back and they cut what was a 14-point Wizards lead to two at times, but the Wizards kept punching back and they didn't give that lead up from that entire span. They basically led from the first quarter until the end of the game, which is very impressive. You got to give Brian Keith credit for a team like the Bucks that they're 47 and 27 entering the game. They can't really catch Boston for one, but they got Cleveland on their back, fighting them for the second spot. They got about two games in hand, but still, you can't really relax now. And this against the worst, one of the worst teams in the league, is supposed to be a walk-in easy W for the Bucks. And yeah, they didn't have Dame, but the Wizards didn't have Kuz. They didn't have any of the go-go guys. They didn't have Tyus. They didn't have Shamet. They had eight rotational players for tonight's game. Only eight available. And they came out here and they played terrific. Before I even get into any of the main contributors, I have to shout out Anthony Gill, a guy that sometimes doesn't play for 10 to 15 games. And then other times, coaches like Wes and Brian Keefe just start him or play him heavy minutes at the backup four or five positions. And he always gives it his all. He's always contributing at some point. He guarded Giannis for most of this game. And I thought he did a terrific job. And yes, Giannis scored a lot. He's going to get his points. That's going to happen. But Gil did a lot offensively as well, and just gave really good effort, really good defense. So I have to shout out Anthony Gil. Same goes for Rui off that bench. But there were five guys, five of the eight guys, which is pretty impressive, that were available for this game that were absolutely phenomenal. And I'm going to start with Corey Kispert. 27 points, 7 rebounds. On 10 of 18 from the field. He shot, I think, 4 of 11 from three, so not an unreal clip from three, but I don't care about how he shoots threes. I know he's a really good shooter. What I didn't know when we drafted him and what's been more prevalent this year is he's a legit three-level scorer. He can knock it down when he's open from three, even when it's contested from three. He can step in, knock down a nice mid-range, has his floater game down, using the glass really well. And he can get to the rim. And when he gets there, he shields the ball perfectly, puts his body in front of it, seals off the defender. He's gone so good and so much improved finishing around the rim, putting the ball on the deck. And that's what you want. You didn't want Corey to be, a one-dimensional, unathletic, two to three guard that could shoot. That's what maybe people thought coming into the league. That's why he was the 15th pick. But he is legit. And the fact that he's extension eligible like Denny was this offseason makes me really, really excited for Corey because he earned, a contract like this. But it makes me excited that we have draft picks that we want to extend, like Denny and like Corey. And do I think Corey would sign for a 4 years, $55 million deal like Denny? I think so. Maybe it would be 4 years, $60 million. I don't know what the price range is, but when you have a guy like that and you can extend him, the perk of that is there's no competing prices. There's no team that would offer Corey 4 for $75. You are the best offer. And Corey could bet on himself and say, hey, I'd rather, wait until the market. Maybe I can get 4 years, $80 million. You know what I mean? But if Corey's like, all right, my agent said maybe I can get four for 66, do I really want to chance that extra 6 mil, or do I want to bag 60 guaranteed this offseason and stay with Washington, a team I'm sure he likes being with. He likes the role he has. I think that would make sense, and I think he's playing out of his mind. Easily the most consistent wizard off the bench this year. I'd even, go out on a limb to say, in general, the most consistent wizard. But just his ability to put the ball on the deck, and his defense has improved. He's never going to be a world-class defender, but his defense is there. It's not bad. You just don't want him to be that liability, and he doesn't seem to be that liability. So just need to talk about Corey first and foremost, because he was terrific against the Bucks. Then you move to his counterpart, Denny Avdia. Drafted a year apart, kind of been on a similar career trajectory. And Denny was just, he's been all around really good. And I say that because he's not scoring like 36 points or, having a big game like he did against the Pelicans with scoring. He's not grabbing like 14 to 15 rebounds. He's not getting double digit assists too many times. He's doing all of this, at a really good rate. And 23 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. That is an unbelievable contribution from your forward, especially in a game without Kyle Kuzma. You needed him to step up with scoring. He did. Without Holmes, you needed to help with rebounding. He did. And he's assisting as well. He's making the right pass. There was a play, it was the best play I've seen all season, where they worked the ball around out of a timeout, got it to Corey in the corner. He then passed it to or Vucevic in the corner, passed it to Corey. He caught, passed it back to Vucevic, gave it to Denny, who then passed it back to Vooch for a dunk. Like, it was the most flawless execution. Shout out to Brian Key for that play. But look, in transition, Denny's a freight train. He puts his shoulder into the defender. Not enough to draw an offensive foul, but enough to say, get the fuck off me, I'm scoring. And he's finishing those as well. And in his rookie year and even in his sophomore year, those were bunnies that he was blowing. The easy layups, the lefty ones, couldn't make them for his life. Those are easy for him now. He had a drive against Malik Beasley. He had it at the top of the key, right to left, cross. He absolutely crossed Malik Beasley, drove into the lane. They contested. He went left to right around the defender, scoop layup, and it was perfect. And those are the things that you never really could foresee him doing. You knew he had it in his game, but it's the confidence, it's the finishing ability, to make that move and finish it, and he did. And that's why, these late season reps are huge for a guy like Denny. Without Kuzma taking up a lot of shots, with the spacing to where it is, if Holmes is out, he just has free rein to be himself. And that's what you want from Denny, and he's excelling. A couple negatives, because I love Denny Avdia, but you have to tell it how it is. He was 0 of 5 from 3. And this isn't an 0 of 5 from 3, like, oh my God, like, he can't shoot still. He's at 40% from 3. I think he's actually shooting, of all qualified players on the Wizards, maybe the highest from 3 this season. And I think 39%. So the three, I'm not concerned with the threes, but he shot 10 to 17. 5 of those misses were from 3. So didn't have it going from deep. And then the one thing that Denny has to stop doing is complaining about these fouls, man. I understand he's one of the worst officiated players in the league. They don't respect Denny Avdia at all. Never give him any benefit of the doubt. And that could be frustrating. But look, bro, at some point you got to shake it off, because there's so many times where he just, he slumps his shoulders in the backcourt after a blown call. He doesn't get back on defense, and it's a 5-on-4. And 2 times against the Bucks, they ended up hitting a 3 because he's not back on defense. He's arguing with the refs, or he's, down about not getting a call. Those are things he can't do. You're in the NBA, bro. I understand it's frustrating, but just get back on defense and talk to the ref and argue later. Or let Brian Keefe do that, because that's his job as the coach. Those are two negatives, and I hate that I have to say that in what was a great performance for Denny, because he was flawless, and he was one of the reasons they won this game. And I don't even have to talk about his defense. You all know how good it is. So Denny and Corey absolutely, carried the load, especially on offense. But they had help. They had help from Jordan Poole. Career high 13 assists. I for the longest time this season, I've maintained two things for the entire season, that I've been on from the start. The first one was all the way back in Summer League when we signed Jared Butler. I said, this guy's going to make the roster. And not only is he going to make the roster, but he deserves to play minutes at point guard. And I've maintained that the entire time. I loved Jared Butler coming out of college. Loved him when he was playing for the Thunder in the Summer League and even with the Jazz in the NBA. He's been terrific. I'll talk about him in a second. And the other was to play Jordan Poole at point guard. And I'm glad that I got that right. I got a lot of things wrong, but I've gotten that right. Career high 13 assists, 16 points. Without Tyus Jones this season, he's averaging almost 20 points and 7 assists per game, adding 4 rebounds. He's a point guard. Tyus Jones shouldn't be back. That's a topic for another discussion. But Jordan Poole, vision flawless. The passes he's seeing where he'll just take it into the lane and make the unreal skip pass through two defenders, or he'll just rifle one into the lane when nobody's looking, Rondo style. Like, Jordan Poole getting these reps at point guard, I can't stress enough how good it is for not only Jordan Poole, but for the rest of the team and for the GMs to evaluate his talent and to see why we have our point guard. He's under contract for 3 more years after this. There's no reason to sign another veteran point guard. There's no reason to do anything, really. Just have Jordan Poole start a point guard next year. Not that hard. He's done everything to show you why he should be a starting point guard for you guys. I don't have much else to really say. You got to watch the games and see what I'm talking about, but have to say how good Jordan Poole is and how good he's been the last couple games without Tyus Jones. Again, not an indictment on Tyus Jones. Very good player, very good person. It doesn't fit with this timeline. Jordan Poole is, taken these reps that he's gotten as the lead point guard and ran with it. And that's something that's really intriguing for next season. Then we move on to, those are a couple of the veterans, still young, but it's still veterans. And then we move on to the young guys. And that's Jared Butler and Tristan Vucevic. I'm going to start with Vucevic because he had career highs in minutes, points, rebounds, and assists. 31 minutes, 14 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists in a win over the Bucks. This is the first time he was really playing true rotational minutes instead of Brian Keefe saying, here's 3 minutes, go run up and down the court, maybe shoot a three, and then come off, you're done. Tristan Vucevic actually played, which was awesome to see. He looked really fluid on offense. I mean, he had a couple floater finishes around the rim that were nothing but net. He had a couple of really good passes, and that's something that I love. The vision, the I don't know, it's like a lot of centers are uncoordinated. I want to say, like, I think of Thomas Bryant. Like, Thomas Bryant was just so, like, all over the place, and, like, he'd catch the ball, but, like, you wouldn't really, like, he'd catch the ball and he'd be moving his feet 20 seconds, like 20 minutes every second. Like, I that botched it, but Thomas Bryant was, like, all over the place, and you have those centers that are really, like, frantic and not just, like, smooth. And Vucevic is smooth. I don't know if that makes sense, but, he'll catch the ball and he'll make, like, a pocket pass like Jordan Poole would. And it seems like it's effortless, something that he's done in the past. He had a nice pass on a cut, I believe, to Denny. Really liked his overall offensive game. Feel like he showed a lot of that. 1 of 6 from three isn't great, but made a three. And the one thing I like is for centers to be able to make free throws at a really good rate is huge. And I don't think he touched the rim on any of his. He was 3 of 3 from the line. Perfect free throw form. That's something that really intrigues me as well. The one downside I've seen is defensively, he's a little weak. He's not there yet. Fouls a lot. I think he had 4 fouls in 31 minutes. And that's going to come with time. I mean, he just got thrown into the fire playing in the Serbian League to the NBA, and now you're asking him to guard Giannis. That's a transition, and it's going to take some time to not get baited into these calls, to keep your hands up, to add some muscle. But I was blown away with what I saw from him. And look, he's trying to earn a roster spot for next season. He's a second round pick. Nothing's guaranteed, and the second year of his contract for next season is also non-guaranteed. I don't think, regardless of how he played, I think he'd still be back, but he's making more money at least. So, just really happy about that. And then you got to talk about Jared Butler. Jared Butler, I've been on this for a while. It feels nice to get one. It feels nice when you've been on a player, for, since July about why he should make this team and why he should be a backup point guard on this team. And he's just proving me right so consistently. 17 points in 17 minutes for Jared Butler off the bench. 3 boards, 3 assists, shot 7 of 10 from the field, 3 of 3 from three. He'd been struggling from three. And it was a part late in the third quarter when the Bucks stormed back. He hit a three, or sorry, multiple threes. And then to start the fourth quarter, he cashed in another three. And those were the things that kind of kept the Wizards afloat in that lead and didn't let the Bucks storm all the way back at the beginning of the fourth. Great vision. Some of the passes, just like Poole, he makes cross court, pocket passes, lobs. He runs the pick and roll so well, makes great reads. Two steals as well. You know, he's a really good perimeter defender, and we knew that. He's got everything I like in a point guard. Someone that can, you know, keep the pace up, can knock down threes, can run the pick and roll to perfection and find his teammates, and also is a really good defender. And that's something I love in a backup point guard. You know, honestly, he's been way better in that role than DeLon was. And I think DeLon's better, but Jared Butler's been great at that backup spot, and I don't see why he wouldn't be our backup next year. And look, I don't want to get too much into the draft stuff, but if you do draft a point guard, then it gets a little tough because Poole would probably start that backup, that point guard would back him up, and then what do you do with Butler? But if you decide to go with the center or a forward or a shooting guard, Jared Butler's got to back up Poole next year. He's done everything, you don't know, everything that has been asked of him. I don't see why he wouldn't fit in that role, especially being on a two-way, being on a, you know, a, I don't know if we convert him to an NBA contract yet, but it's cheap. And there's no incentive to sign a backup point guard to eat up Jared Butler's minutes and pay him big money. Just keep Butler, and go from there. But overall, I wanted to highlight those five players for a couple minutes. This was such a good win. I mean, I'll take the L here, right hand up, and take accountability. I tweeted in my keys to the game, just have fun. This is gonna be a blowout. The Bucks are really good. The Wizards are really bad, but they proved me wrong. You know, the last couple of games they come out kind of flat and they competed for the most part, but then they threw it away in the second half. They played a complete game, basically led wire to wire. And I just have nothing bad to say about this group and the eight guys that went and gave it, you know, their all against a really solid championship contender Bucks team. So really impressive win. Shout out to Brian Key for having the guys ready. But we're gonna get in now to some mailbag questions I asked you guys on Twitter to give me some of your most pressing questions entering the final stretch. And I'm gonna go through these not relatively quick, but you know, just don't wanna hone in too much on one because I wanna get to as many as possible. And then at the end of the episode, I wanna give you guys an update on where the Wizards sit in the draft and what these final six games mean for the Wizards. So, firstly, this is from at Deuce Incognito. He asks, should we bottom out again next year? Should we bottom out again next year, basically by, you know, gutting the roster, or should we run it back with a similar group and maybe win 20 games? Basically, you know, what's the goal for next season? And Deuce, I would say, I would prefer to bottom out. I'd prefer to trade some of these veterans or let some of these veterans go that we had this year. You know, guys like Tyus Jones won't be back. Landry Shamet won't be back. Guys like Holmes and Bagley are going to be back because they have player options, I believe. But I would prefer to have, you know, maybe two or three veterans. And I'm not, I don't want to count Denny, Corey, and Poole. They're going to be here next year. I'm talking about like not signing Gallo or trading for Gallo or Muscala. Like not making those moves. Just young roster. With Denny, Corey, Jordan Poole, and you go from there. That's what I prefer. And if we win eight games or we win 22 games, I don't care. Just get me a 14% chance at Cooper Flagg or Boozer. I don't give a fuck about anyone else. If you can get that top three odds for the first pick, it doesn't matter how many games you've won. I don't really care what veterans you brought in or some of the little trades you made. It's about getting good draft positioning next year as well. Like we, this is a question that someone else posed, so I don't want to talk about it too much, or I'll just talk about it now. Washington fan 81 said, how many years until the Wiz can contend for a championship again? This goes into this question that I'm talking about right now. It's going to take, I think, at least another 4 years, and that's at least. So next year is going to be pretty similar. And if you're bought into this rebuild now, you got to be bought in for yet another year of terrible, not terrible basketball, but pretty bad basketball, a lot of losses. And you just that's what you have to do when you're doing it the right way. When you don't, you know, traditionally attract free agents, you gotta get it through the draft. You have to find your guy. And the Wizards' best chance at that is not this. This draft has been called one of the worst drafts ever, but next year's is one of the best ever. So you got to do the same thing. You got to give yourself a chance at the first pick. So I would say bottom out is probably the best thing. Next, Wizards Muse. Shout out Wizards Muse. Follow them on Twitter. Do really good stuff. They said, how long should we keep Rashawn Holmes? As Rashawn Holmes stan, somebody that is like Rashawn, I thought last year in my trade deadline article, I said we should make a move for him. Just give so much effort and energy, someone you love to have on your team. He says, how long should we keep him? Well, Holmes is a $12.6 million player option for next season that I mean, he's going to exercise. I don't think he would be able to demand anywhere more than 4 to 5 mil in the open market. So this is might be his last big payday in the league. $12.6 million. He's going to take the player option. He's going to be back next year. In terms of how long we should keep him, and I talked about this with Will Clayton in my last episode, Holmes and Bagley are sort of bridge players. You know, guys that won't be here for the long haul of this rebuild. But I like how they're skilled enough so guys like Denny and Corey and Poole can play with them and learn. You know, playing alongside decent defenders and really good offensive players that can take their games to the next level. Because if you're playing with a bunch of bums, you're not going to improve. You need to at least be competitive. We need to be put in winning situations at some point. So these guys being here next year, they're going to make us a little better, which is, I don't know if you think that's good or bad, but in terms of the player development, I don't mind it. After next year, I don't see Holmes being here. Same goes for Bagley. Just don't really fit the timeline as, 25 years old. I think Holmes might be 28 to 29. So don't really fit the Wizards timeline in terms of this rebuild, but next year definitely. The year after that, I doubt it. @dumbveggie asks, do you see Johnny Davis on the roster next year? And I know the person that asked this, I know you're a big Johnny Davis fan. Do I see him on the roster next year? I would say 100%. And I say that with the utmost confidence. Yes, the old regime that drafted Johnny is out, and it's new guys that didn't draft him that don't, have any stake in whether he's good or not. Didn't evaluate him, probably didn't see much in him to draft him, but you're stuck with him. He's only entering year three. He's shown signs this year of being a really good defender. The offensive game is absolutely terrible. And as a Johnny Davis person myself, that has I probably hold the most Johnny Davis stock ever. Don't know why, but Johnny Davis is on. I think he's making maybe 6 to 7 million next year. You're gonna have so much free cap space. He could still develop into something. He's a slow developer at Wisconsin. Took really his junior and senior year to emerge as that guy. I'm not saying Johnny Davis will ever live up to the hype of that 10th pick, that 10th selection, but I do think the defense is there. Had a couple blocks the other night. Moves his feet really well. He's getting his hands in passing lanes. If he can even get any semblance of a shot, I think Johnny Davis can be a decent rotational player. Never a starter, but a bench player for this team. And you kind of need guys like that if you want to compete. Look at Jalen Suggs. I say Jalen Suggs for Johnny Davis all the time because his first 2 years in the league, Jalen Suggs couldn't hit shit. He couldn't make a shot. But the defense was always there. And Jalen Suggs can now make threes with the best of them. He's shooting a really good clip from three. He's got a good offensive game. He's the leader on that team, defensive anchor. And that's something I think Johnny Davis can be sort of, it's hard. It's hard when both things aren't there, but when he hangs out on defense, it makes it a little easier. But at the end of the day, there's no point in moving off Johnny Davis. Nobody's going to sign him in free agency, maybe to a G League contract, but just keep him. Let him play Summer League. He's under contract for next year and the following year. There's no rush to move off his deal. Now, if you were contending now and he was making 7 mil, I'd say, yeah, probably move on. But you're not. And it's the same thing. Jordan Poole's contract, is it great? No. But he's playing better, and you've given him that time to develop. You're also not paying anybody too much money. So you can afford to have decently bad contracts on your roster and still be content with paying those guys because it doesn't matter in terms of the cap. So that's Johnny. He'll be on the roster next season 100%. My guy, Will Clayton, on the last pod, he said, are there any coaches or free agents you're interested in this offseason? And this is a great question, Will. And something I want to dive more into as we get into, I'd say July or early July, late June, when we're talking free agency. In terms of free agents, it's always tough when you're on a rebuilding team because you have to fill out your roster. You don't just want to a bunch of 20 to 23 year old guys and maybe a couple of veterans. Like you want to have a decent roster at least, but a roster that allows the young players to play as much as possible and to still develop. And I don't think any, veteran free agent is going to want to sign in Washington just to sit on the bench and teach for an entire season. So I would, it's tough. You kind of want to sign 1 year deal free agents on expiring contracts and then at the deadline flip them for a couple seconds. Because you have unreal cap space, so you can sign these people. I just at the moment I don't know those free agents. So I can't really talk too much about that. In terms of coaches, I think Brian Keefe has done a decent job, and I respect him for having his guys compete every single night. But his roster's fucking terrible, and he's not been given a good situation coming in inheriting one of the worst records in the league at the time, and a system that Wes Unseld Jr. built that failed. Do I think Brian Keefe should be back next year? No, I believe the Wizards need to try to hire their guy. But if that guy's not there, then sure, run it back. I don't care if you're terrible next year. I don't care if Brian Keefe is a bad coach. You're not trying to win. You just kind of want to build a decent culture in Washington. So the goal would be to, look for that coach maybe, but I also don't know. And I don't know if if I'm answering this the right way. I don't have too much intel in terms of coaches. That's also something that comes to light at the end of the season. Usually it's not former head coaches you're hiring. It's some of these assistants, these top assistants that people are recommending on the benches of really good teams. So I would assume after some teams get eliminated and you start to see some head coaching high interviews, the Wizards will make that decision with Brian Keefe and what they want to do. At Sheck Wes Unseld, terrific name, said, "Who is my NBA comp? Alex Caruso." I'm not the most athletic person, but I can knock down a couple threes if you need me to. It's tough because I suck at defense, and Alex Caruso is great, but I'm just more so talking about like I kind of try to do everything on the court. A pretty good passer. So yeah, Alex Caruso, he's also white, so and I'm white as well. It just makes sense. At MFL is trash said, "Should we target Edie Filipowski or Donovan Klingon with our later first round pick?" Yes, I mean I've seen Klingon in a lot of mocks be top five based on his tourney performance. So I maybe you'd have to target him with your first round pick. But I don't like Zach Edey as an NBA prospect. I just too many times with guys like that, they can't move. And I mean, if Rudy Gobert is getting put on an island in the playoffs every time, Zach Edey will too. Just throw a smaller person on him, draw him out of the paint, and he can't do anything. And offensively, he can bang with the best of them against these, skinny college people, but against NBA guys, they're not going to let him do that. And he's a very polarizing player, but I'm not a fan. I don't think Kyle Filipowski is good. I think he's big and, he uses his size decently, but he's also just sitting on the 3-point line and chucking threes. He doesn't like banging with the best of them down low, and I just don't see his upside. In terms of Klingon, Klingon's a guy I would trade that late first round pick and a couple of our seconds or pick swaps in back into the first round to pick up Donovan Klingon. He reminds me so much of Walker Kessler. They're just big dudes that block shots, set screens, roll to the paint. Like they are the traditional centers. And I think Klingon's gonna be terrific in the league. So if he's still there with the Clippers pick, which there's no way, obviously take it, but I would trade back into the first round to take Donovan Klingon if he's there at like 15 or 16. At Coach Mitch said, "What type of center should we be looking at this offseason?" A new one, I would say. A new center. I know Bagley and Holmes will be back next year, and that's fine, but in terms of signing one, I don't think that's the best course of action. I think there's a decent bit of center talent in this draft to where you could probably grab one there and be your third center. And if you take Sarr or Klingon, they should, probably start from day one. But in terms of what I'm looking for, if we draft one, I kind of want a center that's a hub for the offense. And I saw JJ Redick use this term on his podcast, and I loved it. Like Jokic and Nurkic, they're hubs for the offense. They throw the ball to them at like the block or at the high post, and everyone just moves around them and they make the right play and they're smart enough to, facilitate the offense through them, or they can score on their own. I think that's kind of the evolution of this game. And you see the Lakers do it with Anthony Davis as well, great passer. I feel like I don't know if I see that in Klingon. He has the body to do it. And I don't know if I see that in Sarr either, but that's kind of what my ideal center would look like. A bigger body dude that can, bang down low on both ends, but also is a great passer, and you can kind of facilitate offense and actions through them. So that would be that would be the answer to that question. And then finally, my guy Matt Moderno asked me, "What are your career goals?" I mean, I'm in college right now. I'm a sophomore. I'm studying journalism. Obviously, the goal is to be a beat writer for an NBA team, and I feel like I'm kind of making some strides into that. It's not the easiest thing. There's only 30 NBA teams. There's not too many outlets that cover them, but it's something obviously I'm very passionate about. You can see I haven't missed a Wizards game. I would say I sort of cover the Wizards, even though I'm a fan. So yeah, that would definitely be my career goal, to be a beat writer for an NBA team. But that's gonna do it for the mailbag questions. So if you asked any of those questions, thank you. And even if I didn't answer them, it's just time wise. And I'll probably honestly answer, I think there's 10 more. I'll answer them in next episode if I didn't get to yours now. But what I also want to talk about is where the Wizards are in terms of the draft, in terms of tanking, in terms of the lottery. And it's a very, I wouldn't say it's a close race. I think last night's win at Milwaukee really, set in stone that the Wizards won't be picking or won't get the pick odds that are associated with the worst record, which means that if you have the worst record, the lowest you could pick is 5. And if you have the second worst record, the lowest you could pick is 6, and it kind of goes down from there. So the Wizards have the second worst record right now. So in terms of odds, where I would assume with a 3-game lead on the San Antonio and Charlotte, the Wizards aren't even going to win 3 more games. The Spurs and the Hornets might win another game to, build that cushion. The Wizards will likely have the second worst record because Detroit ain't winning another game. That would mean that the Wizards' odds are as follows. They would have a 14% chance at the first pick, a 13.5% chance at the second pick, a 12.7% chance at the third pick, 12% chance at the fourth pick, a 27.8% chance at the fifth pick, and a 20% chance at the sixth pick. So it could get a little dicey. It would, I mean, the Wizards are the worst lottery luck. It would suck so much if the Wizards did all of this just to pick sixth. It would suck. And that's what I hate about the lottery. And I understand you don't want to, you don't want teams to tank, but they do anyway. And for a team like the Pelicans to finish ninth, clearly not need the help, and then get the first pick and get Zion. For a team like the Raptors, who I think was supposed to, get the 11th pick or something, and they get 4 for Scottie Barnes, it's just, it's annoying. And I, if the Wizards don't get fucked over here, I won't be complaining, but I'm complaining already because I know they're gonna get fucked over, and I know it's gonna piss me the fuck off when they do. But look, at the moment, Pistons 13-62, Wizards 1.5 games back, essentially 2 once the Pistons lose another game. So that is unattainable. But they have a 3-game lead on the Spurs and a 3-game lead on the Hornets. So they're going to be locked into that second worst record. They should have a decent chance at a really good pick. Hopefully they don't get fucked over. And then you move on to the Clippers pick, and I've seen a little bit of confusion about the pick. So I'm just going to talk about it. The pick right now for the Clippers is set at, or the Clippers are 47-28, and the picks, the first 14 picks in the lottery are determined by the lottery system, okay? But every other pick from there on out is determined by your regular season record. So it's regardless of where you finish in the playoffs and how well you do. It's how well you did in the regular season. And right now, the Oklahoma City Thunder are 52-23. The Clippers are 47-28. So the Clippers aren't going to catch the Thunder. The Wizards pick is locked in pretty much to being wherever the Clippers select. Because the other two teams were, I think, the Jazz, who are obviously in the lottery and they're not even close. And then there's one more team. I'm not sure, but they're not even close either. So it's going to be the Clippers pick for the Wizards. And so obviously the Wizards don't care how the Clippers do in the playoffs. It's regular season record determination. And right now they're sat at 25. They're tied with the Bucks actually, for the fifth best record in the league, which would put them at 26, and there'd be a coin flip to decide which one gets 25 and which one gets 26 if they finish with the same record. So not only are you rooting for the Wizards to lose out, you're also rooting for the Spurs and the Hornets to just win a game more or two to ensure that the Wizards get the second worst pick. And you're also rooting for a bunch of these teams that are around the Clippers, because they can't really get any worse than 20 than 26. You know, the teams above them all have 52 plus wins. They won't catch them for the most part. But you want the Bucks to keep winning, because if they keep winning, then they hold off the Clippers, and the Clippers would have 25. And then you got teams like the Cavs that are a game and a half back of the Clippers, the Mavericks, the Pelicans. They're right there, two games back. So for the most part, I can foresee the Clippers picking as high as maybe 22, because you got 4 44 win teams. So the Clippers would have to really bottom out if they end up not getting to 50 plus wins. And the remaining schedule is not that difficult. They got three straight at home against Denver, Utah, and Cleveland. They got a home and home against Phoenix, and then they finish at home against Utah and Houston. So I could see them winning five of these last seven games easily. Especially, you know, if they're gonna keep playing the way they've been playing pretty well. So the Clippers pick should be around 24 or 25. The Wizards pick should definitely be top six. They'll clinch that very soon. And then they also unfortunately don't own their own second round pick, which would have been 32. But the Suns currently have the 49th pick, and that's the Wizards unprotected. So that second round pick goes to the Wiz. So they'll have three picks in this draft. But I just kind of want to give you an update on the lottery in terms of what to watch for. Basically, you're rooting obviously for the Wizards to lose. You're rooting for the Hornets and the Spurs to win another game. I have a tweet out, and I'll let you know when the Wizards clinch that top six spot. Like I said, when the Wizards get the second worst record and clinch it, that means that they automatically can't drop any farther than six, which would be the highest they've drafted since they took Brad in 2012. So, I mean, not Brad, Otto, you know. Otto third overall. But I mean, nonetheless, you want to root for the Wizards to lose. You're big Hornets fans and Spurs fans for the last couple games. I would say Pistons, but they're so bad they're not gonna win two more games to even make it matter. And even at that point, it would be a coin flip that the Wizards would 100% lose. So who cares about that? And then you're obviously rooting for the Clippers' downfall. You're the fan of every team the Clippers play to improve that second round pick, or sorry, that second first round pick. And you're also rooting for teams like Milwaukee, Cleveland, Dallas, you know, those 44 win teams like the Pelicans and the Suns. You're rooting for all those teams to win as well, because the more they win, the higher chance they have to jump the Clippers in terms of record and have the Clippers move down into the low 20s for those picks. So yeah, those are what you want to watch for, but that's probably going to do it for this episode. Again, to recap, talked about Denny and Corey absolutely balling out against the Bucks. Talked about Jordan Poole playing so much better, averaging nearly 20 and 7 without Tyus Jones in the lineup. Tristan Vucevic and Jared Butler should be key pieces next season. They've been playing very well. Answered some mailbag questions. If I didn't get to your question, I'll answer it next time, I promise. So I appreciate all you guys that asked me questions. Hope I answer them in a good manner for you. And then I talked about what you should really be looking for as the season winds down, who you should be rooting for, and what's at stake for the Wizards. And I'll update this next episode as well with where the Wizards stand. But again, that's going to do it for this episode. I again appreciate all you guys for tuning in as always. The pod is, you know, the numbers have been great. I don't like to look at the numbers too much, but the support has been, you know, really great. Even people reaching out to me individually and telling me how much they enjoy it, that absolutely makes my day and means the world. So thank you to everyone who listens and shares the pod. And that's going to do it for this episode. Go Wiz.